As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 6, Episode 25. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And I'm also joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Alrighty. I'm going to start with some facts, but I'm going to pivot and call this Keen Facts because, you know, Keen, our friend on our Slack channel, has contributed a few things on the Lower Decks in our spoiler channel. He also noticed that the exercise clothes were from TNG season 3, episode 8. Didn't give me the name of the show though, but yeah, clearly there's a picture of Deanna and Beverly Crusher doing their exercises with the aforementioned clothes on. And he also pointed out that Kramer had a similar nacelle light experience when, I guess it was a chicken rotisserie sign next to him. And so there was like red light coming out of his room. And Jerry says, "Can't you close the blinds? They are closed." So anyways, a clip here in the show notes. And then other friend on the Slack channel, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Dave Price says that Ariana Greenblatt played young Ahsoka, and she also played young Gamora. So there's sort of a weird crossover universe connection there. Interesting, eh? Oh, was that a spoiler for today's show?
I thought she had a familiar face, but couldn't place it. So good on Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll discuss that when Keen's not listening, because you know we don't want to wreck his
young Ahsoka. You say.
Young Ahsoka? No, maybe I say young Ahsoka. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, but we'll jump over to the headlines. And hopefully Keen's not a Chucky fan, but we'll find out.
Yeah. So this trailer that we'll have in the show notes is technically a couple weeks old, but I had no clue that this had come out until my television said, "Hey, there's a new thing for you to watch related to Chucky." I'm like, "No, there's not, liar. I haven't heard about season 3. Well, guess what? It's season 3. This is the announcement trailer that I got the old school way off of my TV versus off the interwebs. But it's just a little skit. Chucky as a, doing like a politician's talking to the press sort of thing. Season 3 coming October 4th.
Do you know, I have a connection to that season because I believe that our relative Justin, who does lighting, I'm pretty sure he worked on Chucky, and I think that Alex, my niece's friend Alex, was also talking about being on Chucky as well. So I don't know if she's been announced yet, but maybe that's a spoiler. I don't know, but that's cool.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that folks haven't seen before. It sort of has to bridge that sort of fine line between. I'll make an analogy to it being kind of like the Cobra Kai series, the Karate Kid based series, where for me as a as a person who grew up with these properties in the 80s, I really do appreciate how they weave in the nostalgia factor. And then sort of the foundational piece is a lot of like teen drama stuff. I'm not really into teen drama. I'm sure they probably, you know, help bring in sort of a younger audience and bridge some gap. Chucky does probably a pretty good job, especially when it comes to that nostalgia factor of like, if you're a fan and you want to get serviced, then, you know, the Chucky TV show is probably as good as it's going to get.
So you watch both seasons already, Jaime, the first two?
Yeah, I've been watching that as it goes along on, I actually don't know which one I've been watching it on, because in this message, maybe this is the new sort of thing that we're going to have to get used to. It comes out on USA Network, Sci-Fi, and streaming next day on Peacock. Don't know what that means for outside the US, but I don't watch on Peacock, so I don't know if I was watching on Sci-Fi or USA Network. I just tell YouTube TV's DVR, like, record Chucky and let me watch an episode when it's ready.
Nice. Yeah.
Doing a quick scan to see where it's here in Canada, but let's see. Oh, it's on Global TV. It's on the Global TV app here.
Finally imported from America.
Yeah, I mean,
designed again, in America, assembled in Canada. Is that how it works?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So what that would mean, Jaime, for you is if you had a cable package, you can log into this television network's app and watch it for the cost of your cable package for free. So yeah, part of our subsidized sci-fi.
Oh, and around the same time, this news came out that Universal Studios Japan is celebrating the 35th year of Chucky and the Child's Play series with a whole bunch of really cutesy merchandise. So taking the monsters aspect, if you take a look in the show notes, those of you transporting it home, you know, there's some normal things like, you know, Felix the Cat or Curious George or E.T. and the Boss Baby and Where's Waldo? And then there's some weirder stuff like, you know, Chucky the doll. You've got what I believe to be Jaws and probably Blue, the Velociraptor from Jurassic World. So kind of an interesting, you know, cute design. This is one of those things where, again, I don't know that any of this stuff is strictly for small kids, but as somebody who watched some of these things and, you know, arguably should not have when I was very young, it was very scary back then. It's really close to for all ages, not in terms of appropriateness, but in terms of that that mainstream sort of appeal, and it's clearly cross-cultural appeal.
Cool. All right, Jonathan.
Yeah, I've got something that was exclusive to the good folks at Entertainment Weekly. The original cast of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, are getting back together for an audiobook project, which is kind of neat. Although notably missing from this project is one Sarah Michelle Gellar. So they're doing a Slayer's book. It's a Buffyverse story, and it is going to be circled around the character played by James Marsters of Spike. And as part of it, it's supposed to be sort of like an Elseworlds tale where, you know, alternate dimension, alternate universe kind of thing, where Buffy is not the Slayer, and so history has changed and everything else, so that's why Sarah wouldn't be in it. And so it includes, sort of focuses on James Marsters' Spike character, but also includes Charisma Carpenter will be returning as Cordelia, Anthony Head is back as Giles. We've got Emma Caulfield to be back, Amber Benson, Danny Strong, Juliet Landau. So it's not the full cast, but it's a pretty good cross section of the cast, back to do this audiobook. And of course they're going to do it in sort of that, almost sort of radio play version of an audiobook. Sometimes you get those ones where multiple characters, multiple parts, as opposed to one person doing voices and stuff like that. So that's kind of neat. If you're a big Buffy head, as I used to be, I haven't really revisited Buffy for quite a while, given a lot of circumstances, not the least of which is the fact that Joss Whedon is a huge scumbucket. Allegedly a huge scumbucket. So yeah, it's if you're into the Buffy stuff, you can get your fix at this new audiobook, and it says it is coming this fall. Jaime, were you into Buffy?
I was very loosely into that thing. I would watch probably a fair number of episodes, but not watch it on any regular schedule. Just, oh, it happens to be on. All right, let me watch. And be, you know, depending on, I guess, the episode, slightly more confused than not. Just depending if it was more story arc or, you know, semi, you know, villain of the week sort of stuff.
Yeah, it does certainly get involved with, like, all the spinoff. They did the Angel spinoff and stuff, so it's kind of a commitment. It's 12 seasons, and it's old-school television, too, so it's, like, 22, 24 episodes, whatever it is, per season. So it's quite a long way to go if you want to commit to the whole thing. But then they told the last few seasons, 8, 9, and 10 of Buffy were told in comic book form, too, so it depends on how much closure and completion you want, too. Alrighty, so next up, we talked in a previous episode about the fact that they were going to do this somewhat random spin-off of Spider-Man. They were going to do an El Muerto movie. Now, this is based on a character that appeared in Spider-Man comic books, and it was supposed to feature the performer Bad Bunny, who was going to be the star, and there was a story this week that he was in a profile in Vanity Fair, and he basically said, you know, hinted around the fact that he's no longer involved in this project. And then afterwards, his publicist confirmed basically he's not going to be involved anymore. So the project seems like it's still going forward inexplicably. This is another one of the weird, random Sony mining all these supplementary characters from the Spider-Man universe that they have the rights to and making a movie out of it. And apparently that movie will no longer involve Bad Bunny, who is a draw. I mean, he's got an audience, and I think people were who are fans of him and the character were excited about that. It's not my cup of tea as far as, you know, I don't really like what Sony's been doing with these characters. And also, I don't think it's a particularly strong character for doing a whole movie around. But yeah, so that's another sort of weird twist in the ongoing what the hell is Sony doing outside of Spider-Man movies.
Well, I have no context. I have no idea who the guy is even before. So can't say I'm heartbroken.
I'm a Bad Bunny fan.
No, but I am adjacent to that. I do have some family members that are into Bad Bunny and go to the concerts and stuff. So I can see the appeal because it seems like this person is pretty popular in the music space, or at least that music space. But I had no clue. I think, and I mentioned this last time, I had no clue who this character was. Like, they were definitely like digging in the like NPR style, like which superheroes do we have sort of left over kind of thing. What can we do?
Honestly, feels like they're just throwing darts at a dartboard and saying a prayer at this point. I mean, the randomness, I don't get their plan at all. It's unless it's to lose money to get someone some tax benefits. I don't understand.
Yeah, no idea.
Could be a good business / career move to not be involved, frankly, for Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
So what about Black Manta there, Jaime?
Yeah, so we were wondering on this very show, if I remember correctly, we're like, hey, what's up with Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom? Like, we haven't heard about that for a while. And then I randomly got this, like, teaser for the trailer. So not a teaser trailer, it is a, like, save the date, this trailer is going to come out during the, I want to say it was the NFL opening night on Thursday, September 7th. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I guess this is still happening. And it is. It is, in fact, happening. It hits theaters on December 20th. Brings back a bunch of folks you would expect, like Jason Momoa. It brings back, you know, the Morpheus guy as Black Manta. It even brings back the, what was he, like, half-brother or something that was proclaiming to be king?
Ocean Master.
Was the main villain. Yes, thank you, Ocean Master. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. It looks, you know, it's kind of a bummer that this area of the DC universe is going away or being transformed or whatever. Because I think the Jason Momoa take on the character has been pretty fun, a little bit on the wackier side, but in a Guardians of the Galaxy-esque sort of way, which is a little surprising that they'd go so far away, given that James Gunn, the director, former director of those movies, has taken over at the helm.
Yeah, it. I had the same feeling. So they put out the full trailer, I think, today. The 2 minute and 2.5 minute trailer dropped. And yeah, you're right. It looks, you know, like this is exactly in our sweet spot, Jaime, with the get a bag of popcorn, turn off your brain. Like, it just looks fun. Jason Momoa is undeniably charming, very likable. It's, you know, lots of action, lots of, you know, Kraken wise, you know, blows up good. I think this is going to be a perfectly entertaining movie, whether you choose to watch it in the theaters as the end of the DC, current DC cinematic universe, or you wait till it shows up in your living room. I think it's going to be just a very easy, fun watch. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it's that expectation that is built around it that's a real, real chore. One more. Okay, so this is my story of the week. This one is fascinating, and I'm absolutely curious to see where this goes. And I expect this story will break wider over the next few days as it starts to get spread into the mainstream media. So there is a comic book creator, a very long time comic book creator named Bill Willingham. And Bill is, he's been making comics for, geez, my whole life, 50 years, almost. And one of his most famous works was a Vertigo or DC Black title called Fables, wherein he took, it's a similar concept to what Disney later did with Once Upon a Time. It's basically, what if the people who were in the fairy tales really existed, and not only existed, but still continue to exist. The Once Upon a Time stuff on TV was a little bit lighter. His story was very much more mature and adult, and but really, really well done. Good series. I enjoyed it. I have not, I'll admit, read the whole thing, what I have read, I've really enjoyed. And Bill's very talented. So this was part of a creator-owned project. So Bill brought the idea to the Vertigo imprint, and they made the series, and he did it for a long time, well more than 100 issues, a bunch of spin-offs, lots and lots and lots and lots of media content produced out of all this. Bill has apparently today decided to take a pretty drastic stage in trying to maintain rights that were afforded to him in his contract, which is to say, he feels like DC has not been, or Warner Brothers, DC / all that whole organization, has not been forthright in, you know, paying him what he's due as far as his royalties, as far as living up to the spirit of the contract and consulting him on a whole bunch of different aspects of it. And so he's decided to take a really dramatic step in that he's decided that since he owns this product, he is going to make it public domain. So He felt like he could not get into a protracted legal battle with DC over these rights to try and exercise his rights as the creator to get the rights back so that he could self-publish or sell the rights to a different publisher or do whatever he wanted. He said, I'm 67 years old. I'll have a link to his Substack in our show notes, and I highly recommend you read it. It's fascinating, fascinating read. He basically said, I'm 67. I'm not going to spend the rest of my days and my money fighting a massive corporation in court to try and get what is mine. But one thing that is crystal clear to me is I have the right to do what I want with this. And so I've decided to make this a public domain project. And so he does not have the right to give anyone else the right to publish it. But what he's doing by making a public domain is saying anybody can use these characters in any way they want. They can do these projects they want. They can't reprint the stuff that already exists. That purview falls still under DC or Warner Brothers. He can't. But what he's saying is you, Jaime, could be like, hey, I want to write my own fable story based on my enjoyment of fables and publish it. Nothing is stopping you now. I want to make a video game based on this. Nothing's stopping you now. I want to make a movie based on this. Nothing is stopping you now. It is a public domain property, just like anything that has lapsed. So this is an incredibly radical decision, and it'll be really interesting over the next days, weeks, and months to see how this is tested legally, what DC's response is going to be, and sort of what comes of this writ large. But this is really, really interesting moment in creator rights, as far as the idea that if you're not going to honor your commitments under contract. And everyone knows that going up against these huge conglomerates is just, you know, part of their strategy is to bleed you dry, right? They basically, they put you in a situation where they say, you know, hey, we'd rather, you know, drag this out in court for 5 or 6 years and make you spend millions of dollars you don't have. And in the end, you know, it could be an ambiguous conclusion. He's basically like, fine, I'm not going to fight that kind of fight. That's a fight you'll win even by attrition. I'm going to do this my way, and has taken this very drastic step of relinquishing his creator rights to it. I am absolutely fascinated with this decision. And I think it's a huge moment, especially as we're talking about all the stuff that's going on with the writers on strike and the actors on strike and the rights and intellectual property and getting compensated for that property properly. I supremely endorse reading this Substack of Bill's and seeing what he has to say here as to the decision-making process, what was at stake, why it was an issue. He's written quite a long piece here. He put out a press release today, so he's let people know. I have not seen it crop up in mainstream media, but those of us on the comic sort of side of things have been trading this around all day and commenting and weighing in. And man, this is really, really interesting. Now, I thought you two would particularly find this interesting too, because again, it comes back to intellectual property rights. It comes back to creator rights. And, you know, that's not something that's exclusive to entertainment. That's certainly something across the board for people who create apps and content and all kinds of stuff. So I'm curious, based on my little ramble here, what do you guys think of this kind of decision?
I mean, it's interesting. Like whenever you, it's interesting. Like I was thinking about that as you were talking. Like I remember when the iPad first came out, there was a really cool 3D game based on Alice in Wonderland. You know, Lewis Carroll's illustrations, and they literally used Lewis Carroll's illustrations because by that time they were public domain, right? You know, and I think there was a Winnie the Pooh one, now that I think about it. But, you know, they were, you know, I'm thinking here, oh, I could, you know, totally do like an app with the content from Fables, or figure out, not, you know, not the actual stories, but maybe go grab a couple of issues and read them and get the gist of it. And then, like you said, come up with something, because that's half the battle in coming up with something that people will be interested in, is something that already has an affinity with the product that they like, right? So it's an opportunity for someone, like you said, who has, you know, either a book or a game or a movie in mind, you know, that wants to, can just jump on this idea, right? And have almost an instant audience. Like it's almost like that, it was a movie with Eddie Murphy where he was running for office and he chose the name of a dying or dead incumbent. Oh,
the distinguished gentleman.
Yeah, and he chose his own, like he chose a name, you know, and his campaign was the name, you know, right? You know, so it's interesting. It's interesting to do that. I mean, it's kind of an opportunity for someone who's not necessarily creative to come up with their own sort of idea, universe, and whatever to do that. So it's an interesting thing. And to be honest with you, I mean, like we've talked about this 1,000 times before, but, you know, most of the works of a lot of artists are built on the shoulders of other artists that they've borrowed from, you know, and as Picasso always claimed to say, you know, be a thief kind of thing, or steal ideas and build on them, you know. So it's a long tradition in art, and whether you're the Romans taking over the Greeks and changing the name of their gods, or, you know, you're Picasso borrowing from Cezanne, and, you know, then people borrowing from Picasso, and so on and so forth, right?
Yep.
It's not, I mean, if conglomerates were around in, you know, 1910, 1911, when Picasso was starting up, it would have been a whole different world, right?
Yep. Well, and it comes back to the, you know, the idea of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was a really terrible film, but an incredibly good book by Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. The idea was to take all of these characters that had returned to the public domain. Mina Murray, okay, from Dracula, Alan Quartermain, Dr. Jekyll, Captain Mr. Nemo. Hyde, Captain Nemo, exactly. So they, you know, and initially they, in one of the later books, by the time it had lapsed, they included James Bond, because James Bond is actually technically in England has lapsed. So depending on the rules of the country, but yeah, I think, you know, same idea, right? Like once these things enter public domain, that's what happened with Winnie the Pooh this year, right? And Winnie the Pooh is officially public domain as of this year. So now we're starting to see, you know, there's a, I think we talked about the Winnie the Pooh horror movie that came out and stuff. So,
right.
It's basically, it's jumping the gun on that by saying, you know, hey, Fables was going to be public domain in, you know, 75 years after Bill Willingham's death. Well, Bill's just pressed the fast forward button on that and said, you know what, why wait until, you know, the year 2100, I'm out and go nuts. And, you know, as far as a, you know, raised middle finger to these corporations that control and again, use the legal system as weapons and shields. This is an interesting reaction to that. Now, obviously, in the long term, it could cost Bill a lot of potential earnings and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's as a statement, as an artistic statement, man, that is just putting them on the table.
Hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Jaime?
I think you all covered a lot of the impact. I'm still kind of shocked that this was even a possibility, that the rights weren't in the hands of DC, that this sort of nuclear option is even available to the creator. So that's pretty interesting.
I think it's going to be tested. That's for darn sure. Because right now, I'm sure DC is probably, their legal department is probably in full speed trying to be nipping this in the bud before people start trying to take advantage of this project. And they may well start slapping people with cease and desists. And what do they call it when they use the law to basically stop people from, is it chilling effect? They all basically start, you know, if these people start popping up, you know, their own fable stories or whatever else, they'll slap them with cease and desists and stuff to try and get them to stop before they can, you know, get out of hand. But yeah, it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
So we're at that part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related, and this week we're back again with another episode of Lower Decks, Season 4, Episode 3, In the Cradle of Vexion. And we'll jump in with our elevator pitches.
Elevator pitches.
Mine is, if you want something done right, do it yourself. Yeah. Which is totally not true. We have two managers go rogue and decide to take over, right? You guys, what are your elevator pitch? Okay, Jaime, you go first.
Yeah, mine was, Boimler and Freeman show us that whether you're a first-time leader or experienced leader, it's really tough to let go of your Legos.
I had computer problems, mismanagement, and mundane tasks. Just another day at the office for the crew of the Cerritos.
Did they try turning it on and off again?
Yeah. I thought you two might very much appreciate the humor of the computer reboot scenario there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So this was a real three-hander, right? Each storyline kind of had its own legs. The A plot, B plot, and C plot were kind of almost given equal time.
Yeah, for sure. Like they kind of bounced around. We had, on the one hand, we had Freeman, and was it what's the Jerry O'Connell character, Captain Ransom?
Yeah, Commander Ransom. Yeah,
Commander Ransom with the ancient computer. I thought it was going to be one of the. I mean, it's a typical trope again of Star Trek where you've got this computer that runs the world kind of thing. You know, I thought it was going to be like, well, it kind of was. I guess the computer, you know, where the computer goes rogue and or it controls people. There was Landru in the original series. I don't know if there was whether, and there was like there was the one where the computer kind of run, or the tribal people, and Kirk gets hit over the head and forgets who he is,
and the one where Wesley is where Wesley breaks the law and they want to kill him and
steps
stuff.
On the grass. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that kind of so that could have been that, and it does happen that when. I mean, they had a problem with the computer because it kept, like it would make tea hot and or iced tea hot, or it would make it snow in the middle of summer and that kind of stuff, right? So that's why Freeman steps in to fix it. And, of course, she's into legacy computers, so she decides, you know, oh, I know, this is Unix, I know this, just like in Jurassic Park, right? And, and somehow she, I don't know, pushes the wrong button or something happens and it actually takes the whole system down, right? Which is true, because back then systems were that fragile, right?
Yeah.
Then on the other hand, we had Boimler was given his first lieutenant assignment, where he was given the task of, you know, this very dangerous thing. I love the interplay between him and what's the name of the girl?
Talin.
She had some of the best lines in this show for sure this week.
Oh yeah.
And so they had a plot with the ensigns and stuff like that. They're trying to, and he wouldn't let them. He thought it was too important for them, or he felt guilty about letting them or bossing them around. And then we had Beckett and Rutherford and Tendi were given the task of trying to, and you know, the course is going to be like not just one Easter egg, but a 10,000 or 20,000 Easter eggs in these isolinear chips, right? That they have to find the one that's bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they walk into a room and it's full of isolinear chips, right?
And no Data to be found.
No Mr. Data, nope. Well, that was it. They ended up having to be the guys, right? So
they played with some nice tropes here. So the in universe saying, like, are you sure you want us to fix this thing? It's not like taking over the population or enslaving you in some awful way, like, yeah. Like we should turn it off. There's some fun stuff around sort of the absurdity of some things, like I'll just go with my two quotes that seem to sum up a lot of the various tropes that were being played with here. To Lynn telling Boimler that your caution is warranted. Statistically, ensigns serving under recently promoted commanders are more likely to experience death and or dismemberment.
And or dismemberment, yes, exactly.
Which, you know,
and or dismemberment.
We've definitely seen that on shows, and at the very tail end, Ransom says, you never forget your first death.
Yeah.
And then something like, it only gets more dangerous from here.
Yeah, it's kind of rite of passage, right?
Yep.
Yeah, cool. So pew pew, that was, I mean, there was all kinds of weird things happening, like, you know, clouds, frozen clouds landing on people. I think, you know, what the part where Beckett has to keep the commander busy while Rutherford and Tendi kind of run around with their laser scanners, and that was kind of a bit of a pew pew action in this one. There wasn't much fighting going on, right?
Yeah, I had the Boimler part of this because you know, the volcano shows up and it's spewing lava everywhere, and they have to, you know, undo everything he just did, and you know, there is the chance of death. I had that one as my pew pew just because it felt like the most potential for a death, and actually does end in somebody's death twice.
Jaime, what do you have for pew pew?
I did have the regenesis in general of like stuff just going wild on the it's not quite an Easter egg hunt, but I did write down that the planet Corazonia is kind of like a Dyson sphere meets Halo in terms of look and feel and how they handle and interact with it.
I think it's called a Ring World. It was a book called Ring World where
the
original orbiting ring.
Yep.
And I still have to ask, where did they get the materials to build the ring from? Because surely they would have upset the balance of the Earth or the planet they were on.
No, they just strip mined the nearby planets in a horrible act of destroying the environment.
Yeah, and which, I mean, if you did that, it would also upset the balance of your universe as well, right? But as we all know, that's why, you know, it's kind of raining and getting hot and burning down and stuff right now.
Yeah.
Climate change, right?
That's the one. On the Easter egg side, this episode was a lot of fun. The room of anomalies, the anomaly storeroom was very funny. I would like to go back and rewatch that one with a little more time and just sort of see what else I can see in there. But obviously the obvious ones, they had the Betazoid gift box, which we had seen in TNG, the weird face sticking out of the box. And that led to a few jokes, which we'll get to into our quotes. We had the Wadi Chula game. That was from the ninth episode of DS9 from the first season. And of course, they mentioned the weird little nursery rhyme out later on in the episode when Rutherford has to actually go through it. And he sort of, you know, just keeps slam dunking rooms, which was very funny. And it seemed like the beam that strikes the Betazoid box at, near the end of the episode, and he says, "I miss my wife." That seemed like a reference to the inner light beam that hits Picard and gives him that whole other storyline where he's living on a different world and he has to live his whole lifetime there. And then he like snaps back. There's also a
callback to last week where the bartender guy said, "I miss my wife too," right?
Yeah, yeah, true, true. The running theme in Star Trek. But yeah, those were really funny.
Nomad was in there too. You know, the one that became V'ger in the movies.
Yeah, there was, again, I need to go back and bit by bit that one. I'm sure there are smarter Trek historians in there who will pull out a whole list of all the things in there. But that was very much fun. Again, it's the privilege of being junior lieutenants. They get to access this room. And of course, for us, it's we get to see more behind the curtain of the weirdness of what it must be like to live on a Star Trek Starfleet vessel.
I recall we have some stuff from Keen. I should look into it.
Quotes, man. This one was just a chock-a-block with them. "Your world computer is lagging," from Freeman. "Everything that has ever occurred is science stuff," from Talin. That was, I thought, just like the best shutdown line I've heard in a long time. I'm not going to read the quote from the gift box, but it was very inappropriate swearing, followed by the line from Tendi, "I didn't know Dr. Ta'ana came in here." "Lancelot, leave me alone. I don't have any meat," from Rutherford as Chief Engineer Billups' pet was trying to attack
ferret,
him.
Yeah.
Yep. Pet ferret. Yeah. "Okay, no big deal. Just a frozen progress bar and some crazy day-night stuff," from Freeman. "Fascinating. A mountain or possibly a volcano has appeared." Boom. "Ah, it is a volcano," from Talin. And Boimler's heroic, "Nobody's exploding today." I like that one. And then one you had mentioned before, I mean, "You never forget your first death." That was a classic. And of course, poor Boim's dies trying to keep his crew safe and then dies again when he realizes how much he'd gone through. That was very funny.
Yeah. Brought back the koala as part of that
whole was bit funny too. That was funny.
What was the koala from originally?
It was like first season, maybe, when somebody was like ascending to like a higher plane of consciousness, and he ends up saying, like, I see, you know, everything. I see the koala. What does he know? It's kind of like, absorbing too much knowledge of the universe into your tiny, feeble human brain.
So a big chunk of this episode revolves around what we learn in the end is hazing, right? This is Tendi and Rutherford and Mariner being hazed by Lieutenant Dirk and Ransom. So I had to put this as my question. Have you guys ever suffered a hazing at a new job or anything like that?
No, but I've had people come to me, having been hazed by other people in the plant, and they send them over to ask me a question kind of thing.
And yeah.
Have to tell the rube that they're being hazed.
Yeah. I may?
I haven't. I guess I've been fortunate there, but it is maybe a consequence of not having the kind of jobs that would tend to have hazing.
Hmm. Well, let me tell you about the world of journalism, folks. It's filled with a bunch of obnoxious, competitive jackasses. And so hazing is constant. Practical jokes are rampant. The only one that I ever got caught by was when I was a rookie reporter. I came in one day and I looked at the morning assignment sheet for what I was going to have to tackle that day. And it was like the length of my arm. And I don't know why I didn't just go, "Hey, wait a minute, this can't be right." I looked at it and was like, "How the heck am I supposed to fit this in one day? This is just crazy." And I sat down and I started planning out like how I'm going to do this stuff. And then finally my boss came over and was like, the rest of the team's messing with you. You don't actually have to do all that work today. I was like, oh man. That was a pretty good one. And that led to a small scale, prank war that went on for quite a while in the newsroom of people playing practical jokes on one another to try and continue the the fun of it, but yeah, it was definitely one of those ones you can play on the people on the new time on the job and be like, no, this is part of the new job. You have to do this. Everybody does this. You know, you can sell that stuff pretty easily, especially for, I couldn't have been like 23, 24 when I ran afoul of that prank. So I was like, yeah, again, just taking myself too seriously, not looking for the silliness in it. But beware future journalists of the world that you will be entering a world filled with wise asses.
Well, some of the ones I can say on the air, like I used to work in a plant where we actually made physical goods, and you'd often get sent for a bucket of steam. Or we worked with wood, and so you'd get sent to go get the wood stretcher. So, you know, if the wood wasn't long enough, you know. But I'm sure those are, you know, tropes that happen in construction all the time.
Yeah.
But like I said, those are the ones I can say on air.
Yeah. Again, I'm also editing out some of the more colorful experiences of my journalistic times. I work in a place now where that would be frowned upon, but back in the day,
yeah,
it was tolerated.
It would be frowned upon anywhere. You'd be in front of HR in a minute.
No, oh yeah. No problem. Yeah. No, true. But back then, boy, it was fine.
Yep. People just can't take a joke anymore. Anyway,
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's move on to Ahsoka. Speaking of not being able to take a joke. So we are at part 5, Shadow Warrior. Shadow Warrior? Yes, okay, I guess so. So, yeah. What's the pitch?
I'll go this time. So, sometimes a hero just has to fall into a pit with a Balrog or a nasty force ghost, just so they can rise again as Gandalf, Ahsoka the White.
Oh yes, true. The costume change. Yeah, I think mine would probably be something along the lines of, like, I mean, it's a typical part of the hero story, part of actual, you know, legends. I think even the Bhagavad Gita has a story where a young prince is taught by Krishna that sometimes you have to go to war and you have to fight, even though you're a peaceful person, right? So. And the name of that person was Arjuna. And over to you, Jaime.
I went with a much more plain, straightforward one that Hera and crew desperately trying to find Ahsoka, who is fighting for her life.
Yeah. You could also say, I haven't taught you everything. That could be another good line. That was a good line in the middle of this show, right?
So we talked in previous episodes of our podcast about how accessible or inaccessible this Ahsoka series has been. This one is just riding an absolute razor's edge, because if you have seen Clone Wars and you have seen Rebels and all of the Dave Filoni led part of the Star Wars universe, this one was a cornucopia of goodness. If you haven't, definitely. And all you've seen are the films and maybe a few of the TV shows, it still offers you a ton of value as far as, you know, who Ahsoka is, her relationship with Anakin, you know, what has sort of had, what has that stick in her bum been this whole first few episodes of this? Why has she been so sort of standoffish and weird? So as far as sort of both in the narrative of this 8-episode series, as well as the larger Star Wars universe, for those of us who are in the deep end of the pool, this was a killer. This was an absolute killer episode. You really get a sense of, you know, the reason why, you know, we've been saying like, well, it's funny, Rosario Dawson's portrayal of Ahsoka has been really kind of standoffish and acting kind of weird, not like the character that we knew. But then we really hadn't dealt with her character of Ahsoka since she found out that Anakin became Darth Vader. And this is the fallout of her finding out that Anakin was Vader, that she was afraid if she's part of this long legacy of, you know, people who are flawed, that she must also be flawed. And that line from Baylan Skull in the last episode, you know, your master's legacy is one of death and destruction, that really hit her where it counts. She really felt that way, that she perhaps was as prone to being, you know, making those kinds of horrible mistakes that could lead to catastrophe the way that things did for Anakin. And that's why she was not necessarily a great teacher for Sabine, and not necessarily a great hang for the first few episodes of this. And then we see her sort of as you mentioned, Tim, she gets rescued by Hera and Carson Teva and the rest of the what are they called? New Republic, I guess. Forces, we see her come back with this sort of smile on her face. She's sort of in a better place. She's had this moment where she went into the world between worlds. She saw her former master. He taught her a little lesson about, you know, her real legacy. And her real legacy isn't one of, you know, flaws and death and destruction. It's about hope and new opportunity and growth and positivity. And yeah, she comes out the other side just transformed in an almost literal sense, because she goes into the water wearing gray and comes out wearing white.
Well, I mean, so there's also the one thing that people wouldn't know, and they didn't really cover it in this one. I think she mentioned it a couple of episodes ago, that, you know, because she was accused of something really heinous, right? And the Jedi Order turned on her, if you remember, right?
Yep.
And once she was found to be cleared, she said, screw you, and left. So the whole series could be called Ahsoka, the Reluctant Jedi, because, you know, for a while there, she was hiding after Order 66, too. Like, she had to run around in the books and some of the series where she couldn't tell people what she was, who she was, or what she was doing. And she had to be real careful about using her powers, you know, and she did occasionally, and they would find out, and then she'd have to move on. Kind of like, you know, the fugitive, in a sense, right? But, you know, it was really interesting to see here. And she does mention, for the people who haven't been playing along, but this is the Clone Wars when she comes back as the young child. I thought it was really cool. Just if we can get into the Easter eggs for part of this is the Ahsoka headpieces. I thought they were really cool because not only her headpieces, but also Anakin's outfits as Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars. Because when they go back to the first Clone Wars, he's dressed in a particular style from that animated series with the haircut, right? And then in the second iteration, he has a more modern armor-like covering, right? And she's wearing a different headset headgear at that point, because they kind of decorate, I guess her species women decorate the space between their face and their, whatever those things are that on their head, right?
Yeah, or headtails,
The headtails or whatever they are. But, and I thought it was really cool because, you know, the jewelry she wears as a little kid is very distinctive shapes, right? And then the other big Easter egg, of course, was Rex, right? I think Rex, we lost Rex at some point, didn't we?
Well, no, he is a character still in Bad Batch, which is the furthest that we've gotten ahead with his character, right? So he was a recurring character in Clone Wars. Very important to the final story arc with Ahsoka that happens in parallel with Revenge of the Sith. And then from there, we see him in The Bad Batch. And then from there, again, we see him in Rebels. And they have confirmed that he was on the Battle of Endor. So that is canon. He was still alive as of the Battle of Endor. So in theory, Rex could still be alive in this era. I think we were, some of us hardcorers were kind of hoping, because the relationship between Rex and Ahsoka is one of the pivotal ones in Clone Wars that does carry forward into Rebels, because she puts the Rebels in touch with Rex and Gregor and the remnants of the survivors who had gotten the chips removed from their heads, and they become critical in helping some of the key moments in Rebels too. So yeah, it was nice to see Rex, and it was certainly nice. It was Tamura Morrison actually doing the voice, and and it was really nice to see those glimpses. We see him both as Captain Rex on the Battle of Ryloth at the beginning, so those are the Twi'leks, and then we see him as Commander Rex in the Siege of Mandalore fight later in the episode, when Ahsoka's a little more teenaged as opposed to childlike, and really nice to see Rex in there, but not as much as I think I was hoping for, especially because their relationship was such a cool part of that story.
I could kind of see that this being, this was the one that was in the theaters, right?
Yes.
Because it had the you know, where she wakes up, but she falls to, after Anakin cuts the Skywalker, whatever it is, and she falls to the ground and becomes back as the young Jedi, or young Ahsoka, and she stands up, and she's in this fog of war, as it were, right? I don't remember there being fog of wars per se in the Clone Wars, but it was a lot of battles and that kind of stuff. But it was kind of neat the way they kind of played that, so that we didn't know this is where we were until you saw the clone troopers running through, right?
Yep. And there, a lot of people were commenting the day after this, you know, talking about just how incredible it was to see the, you know, the Clone Wars come to life. You know, these are, the Battle of Ryloth is straight out of the episodes. The Battle of the Siege of Mandalore is straight out of the episodes. To see the Darth Maul loyalists, Mandalorians in their uniforms with the spikes on their helmets, and, you know, just, it, you know, the Ryloth, the Twi'leks on Ryloth, you know, running into battle. I couldn't make out whether that was supposed to be Ayala Sakura, who was a Jedi from that species at the beginning, or if that was just supposed to be a troop or something like that, but that was kind of interesting. So, yeah, it was really an interesting little trip down memory lane for Clone Wars fans.
Mm-hmm. So you want to go through Easter eggs? I mean, there was probably way too many for me.
Yeah,
to
I mean, the obvious ones we talked about, obviously Rex and actually Tamura Morrison coming back and doing the voice, Battle of Ryloth, Siege of Mandalore we talked about. There was a reference to Senator Organa running interference for Hera. So at that point, I guess it would be Senator Leia Organa, because this is after the fall of the Empire. So that was an interesting little Easter egg in there, little Leia reference. Always nice to get those in there. Jaime, did you have any other Easter eggs?
I did write down, you'd got Captain Rex. I wrote the mention of Kanan Jarrus.
Yep.
Jason's father. The little bit of Vader snippet that you get.
Yeah.
The little bit of visual and audio sound.
And the color of his lightsaber, too.
So the red lightsaber Anakin is a tricky one, because it's not like a real Easter egg, other than this is what you would think of, right? Like, this literally never happens, because, you know, in Revenge of the Sith, he goes full bad in his with his blue lightsaber, the one that ultimately ends up, family heirloom going to Luke. But this is, I think, what you would think of and consider, right? Oh, a young Anakin Skywalker running around with a red lightsaber, because that's what a Sith would do. The other one that I wrote as a sort of intentional choice of style is, we were talking before about like how Ahsoka's style of fighting with the lightsaber is very different than Balin's style, right? And I would even throw in here, Anakin style, young Anakin style is very different than Vader, Darth Vader's, you know, suited style. This is a very cocky fighting style where he doesn't cover up his weaknesses too much. He's gonna, you know, outmaneuver you with his just raw talent, right? He leaves stuff open. He's got a lot of twirl stuff, a lot of heavy, aggressive type of moves. So that's what I wrote, that it definitely felt like somebody was paying attention to what his style was in the prequels.
Yeah, and the spoiler, of course, is that she beats him at the end. Right? She manages to... He disarms her, but did she let him disarm her so that she could disarm him?
I don't think so, because I think in the end, what it comes down to is what he says at the beginning. You know, you have to make a different choice. You have to choose to live. You have to try to realize who you are, right? And so when she ends up disarming him, and you know, you can see the anger in her face, you can see it. And the whole point was she was worried that she would turn the way he turned, and in the end she turns off the lightsaber and says, "I choose to live," right? And that's really the moment where she's transformed. She's changed from worrying that she was going to go down a dark path like Anakin, because if she was taught by Anakin, what else could she know? And then realizes, no, I'm my own person. I'm my own Jedi. Jose, my question is, and we talked about this in past episodes. So the arc of Anakin on the Clone Wars redeems the rather crappy version we saw in the first three films, the prequel films, that is. In that, by the time you get to watching all of Clone Wars, and then even especially once you get to Twilight of the Apprentice, in Rebels, where Ahsoka finally does realize that Vader is Anakin, it makes for a real tragedy. You realize like how really heartbreaking it is that Anakin fell, that he was this complete person that had, you know, love and friendship and kindness and empathy and all these beautiful human traits. And so when he falls in Revenge of the Sith, it is a genuine tragedy. In the movie, it felt really forced and fake and quick. And again, the writing was not the best writing that's ever occurred in Star Wars. When we see it played out by Dave Filoni in Clone Wars and into Rebels, it really feels tragic. Here we have Dave Filoni writing dialogue and bringing back and using some computer technology to de-age Hayden Christensen and have him come back. And this was far and away the best version and live action we've ever seen of Anakin. He is, of course, a ghost, but he's also, he really feels true to the character that we've come to love through the Clone Wars, and not the one we were kind of mercilessly mocking for the first couple or the second couple of live action movies for the prequels. Do you think that this is a nice sort of bow on the redemption of Hayden Christensen / Anakin Skywalker?
I think it's more important for Ahsoka's growth, right? Because I mean, she doesn't actually get ultimate closure, because she, at the very end of it, she turns to ask him a question and he's gone, right? So she doesn't actually get to ask that final question that she wants to ask, right? But she did go through this lesson with him, which is what the whole point of this sequence was, that she had to learn that the prince's, you know, the Bahagiva lesson, that you can't always win with peace, right?
Hmm.
Sometimes you have to go to war to get peace, right? Or to get, you know, to move on. That's just the way things are. But and I think that was the point of this, is that she had to make the choice to live, right? And that was the lesson here, was that she had to get to the point where she's either going to let him run her through, right, and move on to the wherever Jedis go when they die, but, or, you know, she was going to take this lesson, learn from it, and then go back and be a better Jedi person, human, whatever you want to call it, you know, when she becomes Ahsoka the White, right?
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jaime?
This is kind of an interesting sort of turn for the series for me, that I'm kind of trying to pull it all together. So I've, you know, seen some of Clone Wars to try to interpret this. Like, I don't know how literal some of this is, right? Like, the world between worlds. I can definitely think that some of this ends up being sort of relative to, like, the Force is everywhere, and there's different ways of consciousness and being. And then trying to take that into, like, you could totally believe in a, do you remember the movie Contact with Jodie Foster?
Yeah.
Where they're like, hey, so, like, what happened? Like, you just dropped down to the sphere and like nothing happened. She's like, no. Like I totally met these aliens and saw my dad, but it wasn't really my dad. It was the aliens giving a form I could understand to my dad. And you end up right. with this like
way beyond her comprehension. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, well, but she also has like 18 hours of like static on her in cockpit recorder. Right. So like you believe what you want to believe, like what exactly happened. And that's one of the things I look at here in terms of like what is actually happening. And I think it's kind of a, you know, believe what you want to believe. The heart of this, I think that you all both sort of really well covered is, you know, recognizing that there is something to heritage, whether that's, you know, literal in the blood sense or in the like master student sense. And yet, you know, it's really hard for us to get away from sort of cosplaying as like what we think we're supposed to be rather than how do I really feel? And it I think you nailed it right on the head of like Ahsoka has figured out that she doesn't have to worry that, oh, I'm destined to this thing. I can be my own person. I can do these things. And maybe it'll end up changing her relationship with like Sabine, right? That she had not, you know, wanted to keep that heritage, that legacy, that negative one that she perceived going. And then I think you're also quite right. Like outside of this universe, we have talked about this being Rebel season 5. We've talked a little bit here, I think implicitly about like, oh, this is kind of like another season of Clone Wars as well, if you look at it that way. And then you end up with this interesting sort of mix of it doesn't break any of the existing canon. It tries to fill in and support some weaker areas. Like you mentioned, like the character of Anakin Skywalker wasn't really that well portrayed through the three prequel movies and is much more appropriately filled in for his fall and his relationships and everything. Why people would look at him in a certain way of like, you know, a wistfulness for who he was and the greatness that he was. And then that, you know, much sharper, you know, disappointment is really underselling it, right? Of like just being crushed by who he became. And I think they, I don't know how approachable this series is in general for folks who haven't absorbed all of that, but I certainly feel like at least this episode might be one that would be kind of helpful to try to tie it together for them, that you can see the metaphor here of what they're going for. So I don't know. That's probably a lot of rambling as I'm still trying to figure this all out, but I am enjoying this. So this was, I did not go to, I didn't get on the wait list for the in theater ticket stuff, but this probably would have done really well in the theater. You got a lot of the cool pew, pew, pew. You've got the majesty of the purgles and stuff that probably would have looked great on the huge screen.
Yeah. I think, this one, it's funny, we really only covered half the episode because really it was about, you know, the search for her in the world between worlds and then her coming out. And then there was a whole 20 minutes after that, which was, you know, working with Hera, trying to figure out, okay, you know, the bad guys won last time. What do we do now? And there's this whole sort of second part. And part of that, you're right, Jaime, was just beautiful. You know, Ahsoka the White then figures out, okay, what we need to do is get these Purgles on our side and figure out a way to, you know, help them figure out what we're trying to do and take us where we need to go. And so we get this whole sort of majestic scene where she, like Ezra in Rebels, sort of uses her sort of newfound calm and sort of connection to the Force, reconnection to the Force, to connect with this monstrously huge creature that basically does the full Pinocchio, opens up the mouth and in they go, and they end up, you know, her and Hu Yang end up, you know, heading to the other side of the universe in this giant space whale's mouth on a leap of faith. And again, beautiful visuals, really, really interesting. Again, between, you know, the Clone Wars stuff and that stuff and even the stuff on the planet. Like, this was a very cinematic episode. Of course, we should mention it was directed as well as written by Dave Filoni. So this was, you know, if this is the person who's going to be directing the sort of finale of this sort of whole Thrawn, Ahsoka, Mandalorian thing, which they've announced is going to come in the next few years, I'm fine with that. This looked amazing. So yeah, it was pretty cool. It was really, really interesting visual. It would have been interesting to see on a large screen.
Yeah. I think the cool part for me was, and we haven't really talked about it, is Jason, you know, realizes that Ahsoka's not gone because he has the sense that she's there. And that's when they mentioned the fact that he's got powers, right? But I think that was cool that he said he could hear the lightsaber battle in the waves. And you know, if you listened, you could hear the lightsabers between, that was when Anakin and Ahsoka were first fighting, right?
Yeah. And it's funny, we knew that, we knew from a previous episode, he said, you know, I want to be a Jedi, but you never know if that's just like a little kid's fantasy or whinging.
Bad feeling about this, right?
Yeah. Like we had gotten a sense that something was kind of happening there, but we didn't really know if that was a for real thing or if that was just like, I want to be one when I grow up. But obviously being Kanan and Hera's child, you'd think that that would make sense to, you know, be force sensitive. And sure enough, in this one, we see that he's definitely connected to the Force. I thought was interesting was that in listening, even Hera, I think we're supposed to understand that Hera can hear the lightsaber fight in the waves. So,
yeah.
You know, that's an interesting development too. Is he sharing that with her, or is she also sort of attuned? You know, is it what they've talked about? You know, the Forces and everything. Interesting.
What do you think about the portrayal of Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera compared to Hera from Rebels?
I mean, Hera is, I love the character. I love the character from Rebels 100%. I am finding her character a little different, but then I think she's kind of falling a little bit initially. She was falling into the same bucket that we've talked about, which is that, like, you know, even from Mon Mothma, you know, that sort of officious, by the books, you know, we're now part of a new government kind of thing that was... I think we're supposed to be laying the foundation for why the New Republic eventually is flawed and falls when we get to the First Order stuff from episodes 7, 8, and 9. So I don't think it's as subtle as they'd like it to be, or I'd like it to be for sure. It feels a little ham-fisted sometimes, you know, the snotty senator from a couple episodes back and, you know, the sort of the bureaucratic, you know, the snotty captain from the first episode that Baylan Skoll kills and stuff like that. Like, it just, I think they're kind of doing that. And I don't know if that's what they were trying to do with Hera, but it certainly feels like it rubbed off on that too. She's certainly not the same character, but again, we really haven't dealt with her very much since we saw her at the end of Rebels. And even then, you know, like we don't know what her experiences have been in the last few years. You know, we know she's had to be a single parent because her partner Kanan, again, spoilers if you haven't watched Rebels, but Kanan dies in the last few episodes of Rebels. And, you know, I think that maybe that's supposed to have made her a little less sort of joyful and humorous, although she is always kind of the mom of Rebels too. So
That's what I mean. She's very much the mom in Rebels. Like, she was the one that kept them from goofing around too much, right?
Yeah. So, you know, hard to say. I'm not loving it, but I'm not hating it. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, it's a different person playing the role too, obviously.
Of course. And, but again, I mean, it is, we do also have to factor in, you know, as I say, she will have gone through a ton of life experiences. Maybe this is who she's meant to be now. But it's funny, last week we talked about, you know, well, is Hera or Hera and Jason, Chop and the Ghost coming through? And by the way, it's a little aside, thanks for all the sexy glamour shots we got of, you know, very Enterprise-esque scan, the flybys of the Ghost. Thank you for those. I was like, my inner Star Wars nerd was fully, fully excited by that. I think, you know, she's gone through a lot of life, right? She's gotten a lot of experience in the time that we had since we last saw her. And, you know, you kind of got to allow for some changes and
growth. I'm not talking about the character. I'm talking about the portrayal, right? I'm talking about the portrayal. So
I think they're intertwined. Thing. I think it's hard to know what her instructions were versus how she's choosing to play it, right? And the same thing. We saw that with you know, the first few episodes of Rosario Dawson, we were all kind of like, it's not quite what I was expecting. It's not quite right to what I think of the character. But now we've kind of gotten through these first five episodes and she's really had an arc where you sort of realize like, oh, what was going on in her head that was keeping her being a little more muted and a little less joyful. And the character that we've come to love through the many animated series so far, it's all intertwined. She was really, you know, holding herself back from, you know, feeling that connection and emotion and joy and things like that, because I think she was afraid she would be led down a path that Anakin went down and that she would, you know, I think she was doing a lot of self-reflection and hence she was a lot more muted. Okay, well, now that we know that, it makes the first few episodes completely logically why she was playing the character that way. But for the first few episodes, we were like, man, she's kind of stiff, right? So, yeah. No. All right. We do some quotes. One is never too old to learn, Snips. That's from Anakin. You do things your way because you care. This is why people like you. That's Hu Yang to Hera. I thought that was a very sweet way of describing who she is. Ahsoka, within you will be everything I am, all the knowledge I possess, just as I inherited the knowledge from my master and he from his. You are part of a legacy. And it's, if you follow that train backwards from Ahsoka or even from Sabine back to Ahsoka, back to Anakin, back to Obi-Wan, back to Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon's master was Dooku. Dooku's master was Yoda. So that is quite a legacy to have carried forward. All of those characters, yes, including Yoda, are flawed and complicated people. So interesting way to bring that all full circle. Ahsoka's, of course, great line, I choose to live, when she defeats the ghost of Anakin. And I don't know how you score this, but we're losing right now from Hera. That was there was a very Empire Strikes Back moment in this one, too, where at the very end, Ahsoka and Hu Yang are inside the pergola and they're about to fly into hyperspace to the galaxy further away. And she sort of says, you know, don't worry, we'll find them. It was very much like the end of Empire Strikes Back. It's that, you know, we're down, but we're not out kind of moment, too, where Lando and Chewbacca are taking off and leaving Luke and Leia behind. In this case, we're leaving Hera and Chopper and Jason behind. So, yeah. Any other quotes stand out?
I'm mean with mine. The one that I wrote down was Jason's, don't you hear it? The lightsabers. And then for some reason that made me ask my big question, which is, does Jason end up training at Luke's Jedi Academy?
That has been raised in a few different places I've seen it. And it is a great question, is if he was destined to do that. I hate to think that they introduce these characters that, you know, meet a tragic fate. But at a certain point, logic dictates that that would be the case, right?
I mean, there's only so many, like, you know, went out to get some milk and came back and said, oh my gosh, the temple's burned down. What happened while I was gone?
Yeah, like, coincidentally, Grogu isn't there now, because we were worried about Grogu when he got dropped off before, and then it turned out that, you know, Grogu's path was actually back with Din Djarin. But yeah, it's always going to come up when you meet young, Force-sensitive people. Hey, Broom Boy get killed in this? Like, who else died in this brutal slaughter by the Knights of Ren that we've seen glimpsed in the sequel trilogy, right? So,
do we know that Broom Boy got killed?
No, we don't. But in theory, the idea in The Last Jedi was that there was Force-sensitive kids all over the place, and those kids could, you know, whatever. So, but, you know, that kid would have existed later, to be fair. So I'm just saying there are kids like that who are Force sensitive who would have ended up in Luke's academy and would have ended up getting slaughtered. So,
right.
My question that I had for this one, which is in here somewhere. I know I had a question. Yes. Did it live up to the hype? This was an episode that they deliberately put into movie theaters, that they explicitly said, like, this is a thing, get ready. Did it do everything for you were looking for?
It was an enjoyable episode. I mean, I did enjoy that part of it, right? Like, I mean, it was one I would want to go back and watch again, because it had a lot of tie-ins to a lot of, you know, a lot of nostalgia and, you know, fan service-y in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a good sort of object lesson. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know about you, but like Darth Vader was a badass, like right from episode 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he was meant to be the Black Knight, you know, kind of like, you know, and they kind of softened him in Return of the Jedi by having that sort of moment with Luke at the end, right? As the Death Star is being destroyed. But Anakin was a whole different game. I mean, they messed him up. They messed up the character, you know, with the first movie that Hayden Christensen was in because it was so badly written, you know. This, and, you know, of course, you know, he was a really interesting character in Rebels and Clone Wars, right? Like you said, like they redeemed him in that sense, right? So it was good to sort of see him and to see Hayden Christensen portray him in this particular point where he's the Qui-Gon passing on the knowledge. He's the mm-hmm. Obi-Wan passing on the knowledge, right? To the younger Jedi, right? To the Padawan. You know, metaphorically and literally, because she actually is a, you know, 13-year-old kid at one point, right?
Yep.
I thought it was pretty good. I think you can get really far with the Anakin Ahsoka stuff, and it definitely feels like the sort of thing you can put on you know, a novelty cup or novelty popcorn tin. No.
Yeah, people will get it tattooed on their butts.
Yeah.
I think I already saw a brief clip that they're starting to put in the Disney Plus promotions too, so the spoilers are coming fast and ready if you aren't keeping up week to week.
Yeah, they put so each week when they introduce new characters or sort of things like that, they do these character posters on the Star Wars social feeds, and this week they did a poster that had Anakin, they did a poster that had Rex, and a poster that had young Ahsoka on it, and it was like, well, if you don't know now, you know now. So it was definitely, it was hard to avoid this week. Hard to avoid.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Keen. Not that he's here. Not that he'll hear this later.
I was going to say, when he gets around to it, it'll all be very funny.
Yeah. In the future. We'll see you in the future, Keen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. If he ever comes back and listens to these parts, I don't know. We'll have to see. Let's move on to our watch list. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys got something. I'll just sit back and enjoy. What do you got, Jaime?
Yeah, I think maybe a few episodes ago we'd had some statement around like the actors that are that guy or, you know, that lady. And there is an actual, you know, fun song from the Screen Junkies YouTube channel that is the that guy song, an ode to character actors like, you know, William
Bill Fichtner, yeah.
Ray Stevenson, there's,
yep.
You know, just go through this nice little song of like all of these, like, oh yeah, there's that person. That's right. Yep. And then, like Jennifer Coolidge now being borderline A-list after mm-hmm. being Stifler's mom from American Pie for so long.
Yeah, no, absolutely true. There's so many character actors like that, right? That are just, you know, their face, you've seen them in many projects, but you know, you're just like, I couldn't tell you that person's name if unless there was a gun to my head. And even then, yeah, that's funny. For my watch list this week, I had to add this new thing that was announced this week, which was the box set for Clerks 1-3. There's a limited edition box set that is being put out of the Clerks movies. Tim, I know you're a fan. It is the three Clerks films on Blu-ray and digital, but the set also includes a 3D miniature of Quickstop and RST Video, which is, of course, the location for the antics of the Clerks in the movies. And it includes a set of stickers that you can put on the outside that sort of change the, you know, the different parts and stuff like that. It's a fun set. If you're a Clerks fan, it's an interesting little piece of memorabilia, as well as obviously, as far as I know, this is the first time we've seen a box set of the three films. So this one definitely caught my eye as something that many longtime Kevin Smith / Clerks fans would love to have on their shelf as a reminder of all the fun.
I did finally get a, I think I have a DVD, I got it at a garage sale.
It might even actually be unopened, but yeah, I don't own the that movie on Blu-ray. I don't know if I own it on a downloadable as well, but yeah, that certainly is interesting.
Yeah, I think I have it in pretty much, I know I have the original VHS. I have a bootleg from back in the day that contained the alternate ending on VHS. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the original DVD had all the deleted scenes, including the alternate ending of Clerks 1. And then I have the 10th anniversary set that came out that included just a ton of behind-the-scenes stuff, all kinds of goodies on that one. And then I have the Blu-ray as well of Clerks. So pretty much every iteration so far, I don't think they put out a 4K version as far as I know. And I think the all-time accomplishment for you and I, Tim, was that we got to see an original print of it in the theater as well. So uncleaned actual film print of it was a different experience as well.
Yeah. And we saw Kevin Smith roll out the third one recently.
That's true. That's true. And I got to meet Kevin a few times, and he's a lovely soul.
All right, well, I guess that's it for another week. So, Jonathan, if people can get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter/X and Instagram is @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right, and Jaime, if people can get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevTheHair.
All right. Well, my name is Timitra, TimMitra, on the Twitter machine, on the X machine, on the Blu-ray machine, Blue Sky machine. What else? All the other machines. That's where you'll find me. Until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Those Apple phones, John.
How about those Apple phones?
You're not in the market for any of them.
I need to get a new phone of some ilk because Foster is so two years ago we did a sort of an upgrade. So I have a 13. Xavier got
he's got the smaller one, right?
The smaller.
The mini?
Yeah.
The mini?
And he's happy with that one. Sherry got my old one, which I think is an 11. And mm-hmm. But Foster has still got the, I think she's got a 7 or something, like something old. And it has really started to become a clunker. So I have to replace hers soon. So if you're doing any upgrades and you want to pass them down, you let me know.
I wasn't really planning on it, but actually tonight is the time to order. But I mean, I have a 14 Pro, which has got a really nice camera on it. Mm. And then Carol has the 12, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got the 12. And so I don't know if she necessarily wants to use, she wants to do the upgrade, but yeah, that's a possibility. I do have a 10 here, but I mean, the 10 can't do the new OS, right? I have a 10 I'm not using.
The 10 can't do the new OS?
It can't do, it can, yeah, it's up to whatever it's up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the issue we were running into with Foster's is that, she's hit the wall on upgrades. And so she's hopefully going to be starting back in high school in the very near term. And we wanted to get her onto a proper phone package and her phone is not ideal for
what
that.
What phone does she have?
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head and I'm trying to remember if it's 7.
Here, I have a 10.
I think
okay, but I have a 10 in my hand, so
yeah.
I've also got a 6, but yeah, no. The one that I had, and I've replaced the battery on it, and I've replaced the screen on it,
But it's not officially, it's not worth anything because it's had parts replaced, right?
Right.
You and I had this conversation before.
Yeah.
About this phone.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked about it for Xavier at one point, but we ended up getting
he went with that.
So I think our sort of family's worth of phone packages expires in October. So I think we're going to sort of see what's on offer. Because again, I'm very happy with my 13. Sherry's happy with her 11. Xavier's happy with his. It's just a matter of what we need to get something more modern into the hands of Foster. Because she's carrying around a bit of a dated model.
Yeah, this one, this 10 will only do up to 16.61, which I'm just installing now that you mentioned it. But it can't do 17. I mean, there is a reason why I would get the Vision Pro, not the Vision Pro, the iPhone 15 with Vision Pro capability is apparently the new 15 Pro can take spatial video and maybe spatial photography, which will then be able to be used on the iPhone or the Vision Pro. That would be the only reason. And the 5x zoom, right? So I was really disappointed when I went to the two concerts recently with my 14. I know I used it at the Cure concert, right? But I was finding inside it. I mean, maybe they've changed the camera software or something, but I was finding that the blacks were coming out kind of gray. Mind you, I was sitting way back. I was like at the very last row of the floors for Clapton and sitting in the 300s for Gabriel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go into the videos after the fact and make them darker, like, because the blacks weren't black enough, right? So
yeah.
I still have to upload those videos, but oh, cool. Anyway, yeah, that's the name of that tune. So we could talk. It depends on your budget, right? So
yeah, I mean, that's it. We need to figure out, I don't know what's
like, can you get subsidized phones anymore? Like, I don't know if you can do that. Unless you get the lower ones, right?
I don't know. I feel like I subsidized this one, but I can't remember. It's been a while. It's the problem with doing these things every couple of years. You're like, what's happening again? I said, it's the problem with doing this every 2 years. You're like, what the hell was I doing 2 years ago? Oh. What did I sign up for? Why am I doing this?
Well, I finally paid for both of my phones, right? Like I just did the last payment on the 12. I bought it through Rogers. So the 12 is paid for. The 14 I bought outright. Because I decided even though I'm staying with Rogers, right, for now, I don't want to be beholding to them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're giving me any better deal because I'm bringing my own phone, but I mean, I've learned this from Mark and Jaime that just buy your phone, right? Like, Jaime, you buy your phone outright, don't you?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mark was on that plan that they have in the States. In the States, they have the Apple upgrade plan thing where every year you can get the new phone. Bastards.
Yeah, I seem to recall.
But you have to pay for that, though.
Now that I think of it, I think Sherry bought me this phone so that we could do the pass down, because I think I paid for Xavier's, she paid for mine, and then we just sort of spread it all around. But this one has been excellent because not only is it a 13, but I got the 13 with the largest capacity, so it's been such a lovely thing.
I use iCloud, so I don't need to have the space anymore. I never fill my phone up.
Yeah. But the flip side of that for me is that I don't have iCloud, so I didn't have to spend any money on iCloud, so that's nice.
We did, because we were always up against the, I got to throw some stuff out because we're always running out of space, so we just bit the bullet, and then, you know, then we get the Apple TV and everything with that, and the fitness, and I'm just going to go and look up iPhone storage here. Yeah, so I have a 256, right, but I'm only using 125.
Yeah.
So
I've got a 1 terabyte in this bad boy, and I think it's about more than half full. So
that's what I mean. Like, that's the thing is now you're like, where do you back it up? And I mean, the thing about this is with iCloud, half of my data is in the cloud, and you know, and plus I share all my data between my devices, right? So I use my iPhone. If I'm working on a pages document or whatever, I don't want to have to think about which phone, which version I have on which device. I just go to a device, sit down in front of it and open the file and go, right? So that's the beauty of iCloud, right?
Yeah.
From that perspective, it's kind of like Google Docs in that sense, right?
Mm.
But and I trust Apple more than I trust Google. But yeah, I don't know. Is the pricing updated online yet, Jaime, for the Apple stuff? Today's the day, or tonight at 5 a.m. or something, that's when you can order them, right?
5 a.m. Pacific. So you get to be in, in bed and wake up on a normal breakfasty time.
Oh, 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, right.
Yeah. The East Coast.
And actually, turns out it's going to be a story on tomorrow's More Than Just Code when we record. They're charging us even more money in Canada than you guys.
You mean even after you account for the rate differences in currency?
Yeah. Yeah. So it says here that the iPhone 15 Pro, for example, is starting at $1,449. I think it's $999 is what they announced, right?
Whoa, really? Starting? Hold on. What did I select?
Select your $999.
So I'm getting the 256 gig model at $1,099. So yeah, you're probably right. It's probably $999 for the base model.
So how much are you getting? 256? What is the price?
Yeah,
$1,099. Copy it. $1,099. That's 256, right?
Yeah, 256 gigs.
Okay, so that would be $1,485.65. So $1,485 with the exchange. Let me.
I'm sorry. Are we talking? I may have misheard you because there's like a lot of different models. I'm getting the 15 Pro. I'm not getting the Pro Max.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the 15 Pro.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss the Max.
Seriously, what other phone is there? There's only that one. Let's go with blue titanium. Okay, so for me, so yours would be $1,099, right?
$1,099, yeah.
Mine would be $1,599, so a whole $500 more. That's crazy. Oh no, sorry. $1,485 is what yours would convert to in Canadian dollars.
Really? I've just typed it into Google, $1,599 CAD to USD, and it tells me it's $1,184 US dollars, which is higher, yes, but not as high.
No, it's $1,485. This is the current exchange rate.
Which number are you converting? Are you converting? You told me $1,599 CAD.
$1,099.
Oh, $1,099 USD first.
USD is $1,485 Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Apple's charging another $110 for that phone.
Yeah.
They're charging $1,599.
Is there a not to make it too political, is there a blame your parliament sort of thing?
Yeah, there's always a $50 something or other, like cost to get across the border kind of thing. Pay off the border guards, I guess, for the truck. You know? Oh, it's coming by ocean liner. That's what it is. Remember they mentioned that in the show? It's no longer coming by air. They're going to ship it up by boat. I have to go down to the Panama Canal, go all the way upside of Florida, come in down the St. Lawrence to Toronto, right?
Yeah, I'd have to think of like what the funniest and dumbest way of like, I don't know, going out through like the Hudson, through like the American side, and then circling around in open in international waters, making a little loop, and then coming right back into the Hudson and doing port right on the Canadian side. Just making this like, cotton swab Q-tip sort of shape on the map.
So those rumored USB charge cables never turned up, right? The colored ones. I would have thought that would be an iMac thing anyway, right? Like, I bet what's going to happen is all the keyboards and everything are going to go USB-C too now, right?
I think I did see an article of, like, here are the things that are still remaining for the Lightning cable. If you wanted to get into, like, deep state conspiracy thoughts, you'd be like me who says, wait a minute, how come my Lightning cable starts fraying the week leading into the Apple event? Total coincidence? Is this, like, probably nearly decade-old thing, or was it timed?
Yeah. Well, if we do a trade-in, I might actually be able to get some money for my 14.
Yeah, you'll probably do pretty good, because my 12 Pro is getting, what?
You're getting a trade-in on that?
Yeah, what's the trade-in value? I'm getting a trade-in credit of 360.
Oh, yeah, the trade-in values are always low for me, I think.
Yeah, it's always going to be lower than, like, going on, Kijiji or OfferUp or Craigslist or Swappa or something. But for me, I just don't want to deal with the hassle. I just want to get an empty box from Apple, wipe my device, put it in the box, put it in the mail, and be done with it.
Yeah. Do they give you the phone first? You must do, right?
I think most times I've gotten the phone first and then the box like a day or two later. but I'm pretty sure I've gotten the box at least once slightly earlier. I'm sure they probably like ship them out at the same time the phone comes in a slightly premium shipping option compared to the empty box that's like whatever the cheapest thing is. So I guess it depends on your local postal service and or UPS service.
How much were you getting for your phone trade-in?
360 for a 256 gig 12 Pro.
Yeah, I would get $780 if I traded mine in. And so it would cost me $819 if I didn't, if I traded it in.
I mean, it's almost like you have the iPhone upgrade program anyways, if you think of it as like you're leasing a car instead of actually owning it.
Yeah.
As long as you keep...
Well, I can also do a monthly payment too, which is what I started with last year. I did a monthly payment, but I paid it off halfway through the year, right? So. I thought with Rogers, I had also, with Carol's phone, I had done the trade up program, but I guess not. I don't know. Let's check with that one. Rogers is always fishy, especially on the day of ordering. They're always like, oh, we have no information. We don't know anything. We're dumb. And I'm like, yep, you are.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of moot because I'm still, you know, obviously Jonathan needs a phone for his family. So.
Oh, we'll get there.
Right, John?
We'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, this is a good phone. I mean, this phone I have here. It's purple. That matter? Mauve or whatever you call this?
I don't think my daughter will care what color her phone is as long as it's more functional.
Oh, this is more functional than yours, right? So it has a dynamic island and all that stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still have the notch on your 13, right?
I do.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's not a problem, but sometimes it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Did we talk about the Donald Glover movie last week?
The Lando stuff? We talked about the fact that he and his brother were going to write it, but we didn't talk... Today, they were talking about the fact they're going to turn it into a movie, right? They're actually going to do a movie instead of a show?
Dave Price just posted it in our Slack channel, which people could join, right?
Yep. Yeah, no, I saw that earlier. I thought, is it worth reporting on? I'm like, it's not really much... Like, what's the difference, really? I figured we had more bigger fish to fry with a lot of Ahsoka talk, so I figured there's no point in really getting too far into the weeds on this.
Yeah, did we give Dave credit for, I don't remember, did I give him credit for his fact check thing?
Yeah,
Dave Price, okay, cool.
Yep.
Just want to make sure I had him covered, you know?
Yep. It's nice to have some active community members.
It's nice to have more active community members.
Yeah, community.
Well, I guess I should put the link to the Slack in the show notes too, right?
Not the worst idea, yeah.
Yeah, except you get idiots. You still have to answer the skill testing question to get onto our Slack.
Yeah.
Which is a more than just code question. Yeah, yeah. Unless I invited Keen directly because we were working together, but at the time.
Yep.
Anywho.
One of my colleagues at Kai High is, she is an Uber nerd as well. And she and her husband, they do a lot of cosplay. So for, you know, for Fan Expo, for Ottawa Comic Con and stuff like that, they do a lot of stuff. And she is a very, like my mother, very talented costume designer. And so she and her husband and a group of their friends all dressed up as characters from Lower Decks for the Ottawa Comic Con last week. I'll put a picture into our Slack channel. But she dressed up as Dr. Ta'ana. Including full makeup and the fur ears and stuff like that. Her husband was Shax.
Oh, really?
They had pretty much everybody covered. They only had, a Mariner. They had Boimler, although the Boimler was appeared to be a female, but that's okay. And they didn't have a Rutherford, but they had somebody as Tendi. And it was great. It was very, very fun. I go through her Instagram every once in a while because she's done tons. She's dressed up as like Hera and Ahsoka and like all these different characters over the years. She makes all these costumes. It's really awesome.
Cool.
I appreciate it when people can nerd out with reckless abandon.
Yeah.
Do yourselves a favor. Read that Bill Willingham.
I did read part of it.
Yeah, read the whole thing. It is fascinating. That is bat crap crazy. It's unprecedented and fascinating.
Hmm.
Just from an artist's perspective of, you know, somebody who created things or creates things, the step that he has taken is just an absolute milestone. It's really interesting. And I'm genuinely surprised. I've been checking all day to see if somebody big picked it up. I can't understand how it hasn't popped up on, you know, Hollywood Reporter, Entertainment Weekly, Deadline, IGN, Comic Book News. Like, somebody's going to get on it soon because this is really interesting. But yeah, like in my social media connections who are in the comics industry, people have just been like, holy crap, all day.
Sure. Coolio. All right.
Yeah.
Kids, on that note, we'll start updating all our devices and we'll see you next time.
All right. See you next week, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.